Does truth exist?
Because you have faith, does that make this book true?
Does God exist?
So when someone says there is no truth, if you apply the claim to itself, what should you say? Is that true?
They don't think Christianity's true.
They're talked out of it. You know why they're talked out of it? Because they've never been talked into it.
Cross-examining skeptical and atheistic views. Welcome to Cross-Examine with Dr. Frank Turek.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have a lot to cover this morning. A friend of mine, Dr. Michael Brown, you probably have heard of Dr. Michael Brown. I've spoken of him many times on this show, and I've also had him on the program. He tweeted out something right after the Paris attacks. This is what he tweeted out. We know that most Muslims today are not terrorists. We also know that most terrorists today are Muslims. And he got a lot of pushback over that tweet. Is there something factually wrong with that tweet? Let me read that again. We know that most Muslims today are not terrorists. We also know that most terrorists today are Muslims. Is that not true? It is true. It's undeniably true. In fact, he wrote an article on it. Michael Brown did. You can look it up. It's at Charisma. In fact, I tweeted it out earlier today. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about political correctness versus Islam. And what I'd like to try and do in this radio program is talk about this and then get your insights in the second half of the program. I want to try and cover four basic questions, and hopefully we'll have time to do this and get to your questions as well. The first question is, what is Islam, particularly radical Islam? I'm not going to go into a lot of detail on that because we've done that on this program before, but just the overview. So what is Islam, particularly radical Islam? Secondly, what is political correctness? What does it mean to be politically correct? Where does this idea come from? Thirdly, what issues should Christians consider regarding immigration, particularly Muslim immigration? And keep in mind, no matter what position you advocate, you are advocating one value over another value. You might be advocating security over taking care of people who need help. Or you might be advocating taking care of people who need help over security. No matter what position you take, in other words, you're involved in favoring one moral value over another. In fact, as we pointed out many times, all laws legislate morality. The only question is whose morality. So we'll take up this question of immigration. And then the fourth question I'd like to address very briefly is, how can we stop terrorist attacks in America? How can we stop them? So what is Islam? What is political correctness? What about immigration? And how can we stop terrorist attacks in America? That's not too ambitious an outline for this program, but I hope not anyway. Let's get into it. First of all, what is Islam, particularly radical Islam? We have on our Facebook page, in fact, my friend and social media director, Jorge Gil Calderon, social media ninja out there, has put up several videos recently, not ones that we've done, but a couple by Prager University, which are worth seeing, and also one by my friend Nabil Qureshi, who is a former Muslim, now a Christian, works with Ravi Zacharias International Ministries. In fact, I just saw Nabil a couple of days ago down at the Evangelical Theological Society meeting down in Atlanta, Georgia. Just got back from there. And in fact, I saw several people down there, and I may be discussing some of their opinions on this issue because there was a seminar on this issue of radical Islam. I may get into that a little bit today. In any event, if you go to our website, actually our Facebook page, crossexamined.org, and or Dr. Frank Turek, the public figure page, and like those two pages, you'll be able to see these videos. In fact, Jorge's putting out about two videos a day that are worth seeing, I think. In fact, we've had several of them get a very robust viewing recently. So you may want to check these out. Many of these videos, by the way, are Q&A videos from the college campus. And so you want to see these. So like those pages, crossexamine.org and also Dr. Frank Turek. And you can also go to our website, crossexamine.org, to see these videos. And there's one by Prager University on our Facebook page, the crossexamine.org Facebook page, that you should watch about radical Islam. And it points out, I think truthfully, that Islam, or let me put it this way, Islamism, or sometimes called radical Islam, This doesn't mean all Muslims believe this. In fact, a minority of Muslims believe this, thankfully. But radical Islam is a political ideology like fascism and communism. Islamism is a totalitarian worldview where the religious state runs everything, and they do it via Sharia law. Of course, in fascism or communism, the state runs everything. There may not be an overtly religious component to fascism or communism. In fact, communism is quite often atheistic. But when it comes to Islamism, it's still a totalitarian worldview where everything is run through the state. It just has a religious component to it. There's no freedom in Islamism or radical Islam. It's an expansionist kind of worldview where it wants to take over the world. It's imperialistic, and it will kill to achieve its goals. Now, here's a critical point. In fact, of all people, Richard Dawkins made this point. You got to give credit where credit is due. Richard Dawkins rightfully pointed out that Islam is not a race. Okay? A lot of people confusing Islam with a race. Islam is not a race. It is a belief system. And for radical Muslims, it is a militaristic, totalitarian belief system that seeks to impose itself on everyone to the point of destroying human rights and freedoms. Let me say that again. Islam's not a race. It's a belief system. Islamism, radical Islam. Now, again, not all Muslims believe this. Only a minority do, okay? But for radical Muslims, it's a militaristic, totalitarian belief system that seeks to impose itself on everyone to the point of destroying human rights and freedoms. In our country, radical Islam is unconstitutional. Okay, imposing Sharia law is an unconstitutional project, and yet that's what radical Muslims want to do. Now, that's the truth. And if you deny that, you can't handle the truth. So when Michael Brown put out that tweet that said, "We know that most Muslims today are not terrorists. We also know that most terrorists today are Muslims," and he got pushback on it. Those people are either just ignorant or willfully ignorant. It's true. And by the way, this is evidenced by the founder of Islam, the writings of Islam, and 1,400 years of world history. This didn't start last week or at 9/11. This isn't 10 minutes, the past 10 minutes. This is the past 1,400 years. In fact, I was at University of Michigan, as I mentioned last week, and I've had people who were actually Muslims who came to the event who tried to distance themselves from jihad. And I say, well, I'm glad you're distancing yourself from jihad. You don't believe in jihad. Great. But jihad is found in the Quran. It's found in the Sunnah, the written sayings, the Hadith, the written sayings of Muhammad and doings of Muhammad. Now, I'm glad you don't believe in that. I'm glad you don't follow that. But it's the truth, and it's been evidenced by the past 1,400 years of history as well. Now, to claim that's not true is just ignorant, willful ignorance to say that this is something new. It's not something new. It's been going on for 1,400 years. So that is radical Islam. Now, quite obviously, we're not going into all the doctrines here. We don't have time for that. But overall, it is a totalitarian belief system, a militaristic belief system with a religious component. Now, the next question is, what is political correctness? Actually, President George H.W. Bush, in a speech to the University of Michigan, of all places, in 1991, said this. He said, "The notion of political correctness has ignited controversy across the land, and although the movement arises from the laudable desire to sweep away the debris of racism and sexism and hatred, it replaces old prejudice with new ones. It declares certain topics off limits, certain expression off limits, even certain gestures off limits." Yes, he's got it exactly right. It's sweeping away old prejudice, but it's adding new prejudice. That's what partially political correctness does. And let me agree with him. It is laudable, to sweep away racism and sexism and these things. But what it tends to do, it introduces new prejudices. And we'll get to it after the break. You're listening to Cross Examined with Frank Turek on the AFR Family Radio Network, the American Family Radio Network. And our website's crossexamined.org. We're back in just 2 minutes. Don't go away. guarantee you one thing, ladies and gentlemen. You are not going to hear what we're talking about this morning on National Public Radio. If you're low on the FM dial looking for NPR, go no further. We're actually going to tell you the truth here. That's our intent anyway. If you think we're not, you can call us at 888-589-8840. 888-589-8840. You're listening to Cross-Examined with Frank Turek on the American Family Radio Network. And we're talking about Islam versus political correctness today. And we talked in the first segment a little bit about what is radical Islam. And we started talking about what is political correctness. And political correctness tries to sweep away, as George Bush once said, the debris of racism, sexism, and hatred. But it replaces this with this old prejudice with new prejudices. And it declares certain topics off limits, certain expressions off limits, even certain gestures off limits. President Bush said that in 1991. Okay, here we are, 24 years later, the same kind of thing's going on, except it's ramped up. A few years after that, a couple of professors said this about the speech codes that are found in many U.S. universities. He said these speech codes, or they said these speech codes, mandate a refined or redefined notion of freedom based on the belief that the imposition of a moral agenda on the community is justified, a view which requires less emphasis on individual rights and more on assuring historically oppressed persons the means of achieving equal rights. These professors claim this, quote, "Our colleges and universities do not offer the protection of fair rules, equal justice, and consistent standards. What they do is they encourage students to bring charges of harassment against those whose opinions or expressions offend them. At almost every college and university, students deemed members of, quote, historically oppressed groups, unquote, above all, women, blacks, gays, and Hispanics," and let me add Muslims now to this list, "are informed during orientation that their campuses are teeming with illegal or intolerable violations of their right not to be offended." Since when do we have a right not to be offended? Where did this come from? Ladies and gentlemen, and this is me speaking now, not these professors anymore, the number one oppressed minority around the world is evangelical Christians. Yet in the minds of some on the left, and of course in radical Islam, Christians can not only be offended, they should be persecuted. So political correctness is not about protecting all minorities. It's only about protecting the approved minorities. In fact, in the United States of America, evangelical Christians are a minority. If political correctness is all about protecting minorities, historically oppressed groups, evangelical Christians are the most historically oppressed group in history. Yet why aren't evangelical Christians protected? Because it's not about protecting the rights of minorities. It's about protecting the rights of approved minorities. You see, the minorities the left believes need to be protected. So political correctness actually substitutes individual freedom, the value of individual freedom. It actually doesn't substitute it. It gets rid of it, and it says that these groups need to be protected. So you as an individual don't have a right to say what you want to say or what you think anymore. That's now deemed off limits. And if you offend anybody, there's going to be trouble for you. That's why Dr. Michael Brown got in trouble for uttering a truth claim. It's true that most Muslims are not terrorists, but it's also true that most terrorists are Muslims. That's undeniably, factually, empirically, verifiably true. And yet people are upset about it. Let me just quote Jack Nicholson. You can't handle the truth. And if you can't handle the truth, you're going to be hurt by the truth because you're not ready for it. In fact, Jesus famously said, the truth will set you free. Well, what does that imply? It implies that if you don't have the truth, you're in bondage. Yeah, the number one thing you got to get right in your life is truth. If you don't accept the truth, you're going to have trouble. Maybe not over the short term, but certainly over the long term. All right? So, Now let's deal with the issue of immigration. What issues should Christians consider regarding immigration, particularly Muslim immigration? And again, let me say this. No matter what position you advocate, you're advocating one value over another. All political positions involve values. They involve saying, well, I value this more than this, and that's why I'm advocating this law as opposed to its opposite. Now, President Obama says, we don't have a test or a religious test for immigrants. Well, we have in the past. And in fact, if somebody requires refuge, see, they're a refugee because they're being oppressed. Quite frequently, they're being oppressed. In fact, mostly they're being oppressed by their religion or because of their religion. So you should have a religious test. If Christians are being persecuted, then they need refuge. So as Americans, we would say, okay, we can take some of these people because they need refuge. So we've done that in the past. President Obama says we haven't done that. That's just a lie. Of course we've done it. Many people are refugees because of their religion. And so we do have a religious test for immigrants. But my question for President Obama is this. He says we don't have a religious test. Do you have a murder test? I mean, if people want to come over here and murder innocent people, shouldn't we keep them out because of that? Now, here's where the competing values come in. The competing values are safety over taking care of people who need to be taken care of. These are competing values. Because if we let everybody in, then we might have a safety issue. But if we don't let anyone in, then are we really helping people who need to be helped? In fact, the other value for Christians that's in here is the gospel. Let me say this, and let me not be misunderstood. As Christians, we should want Muslims to come to America. We should. So they can be safe from oppression, and we can reach them for Christ. It's very difficult to reach Muslims in Muslim countries for Christ. In fact, Nabil Qureshi said the other day that over our history, we've sent one missionary for every million Muslims. Obviously, it's very difficult to be a Christian missionary in a Muslim country because they put Sharia law in place, and it's illegal to preach the gospel. So it would be a good thing to have more Muslims come to America. If for no other reason, it could give us an opportunity to reach them for Christ. But there is a balance here. And the balance is that, yes, we want to reach people for Christ, but we also don't want people coming over here who themselves want to impress and kill. We don't want them to come through the gates or to come over the borders. So there has to be a balance between safety and compassion, safety for Americans and compassion for those that need assistance because they're being persecuted. But we don't want the persecutors coming over here. So there is a balance. There's no question there's a balance. And one thing that ought to be considered here is, why aren't there more Arab countries taking some of these refugees? In fact, I don't know if any Arab countries who are taking them. Is Jordan, perhaps? What about Saudi Arabia? Saudi Arabia won't take any of them. Why not? You see, this is often never mentioned. John Warwick Montgomery, a famous apologist who's been around for many years, he's 84 years old now. I had the privilege of seeing him just a couple of days down in Atlanta at ETS, and he was talking about this issue. In fact, the title of his talk was something like The Non-Politically Correct Solution to Muslim Immigration, something like that. Anyway, in the middle of his talk, he said, we can't confuse tolerance with stupidity. Exactly. We can't confuse tolerance with stupidity. Or let me even go a step further. We can't confuse compassion with stupidity. In our efforts to be compassionate, we may actually be killing people indirectly. Why? Because if we have too tolerant an immigration system, we may be allowing people in here who are going to kill us and kill innocent people. So we have to in some way figure out a way to be compassionate without being stupid, without potentially putting millions of people in harm's way. In fact, one of the things David Wood said, who debates many Muslims the other day at ETS, is he said, I'd be for a lie detector test before you bring people in. Now, this would be very expensive, obviously. But, of course, according to Islamic doctrine, it's okay. In fact, it's a good thing to lie to the infidel. So you're not going to – this is why, you know, going through the airports and when people ask you, you know, has anybody given you anything and put anything in your bag? Did you pack your bag yourself? Did you – you know, I mean, if someone truly was carrying something that they wanted to terrorize the plane with, are they going to admit that? I mean, it's just so stupid to ask people who are willing to blow themselves up if they have any weapons on them. Or has somebody else packed your bag? Or anyway, the point here is that we can't confuse tolerance with stupidity. There has to be a balance. And we have to figure out a way to help people at the same time keeping people safe, because the number one priority of government is to protect the innocent from evil. That's the number one priority of government. That's said in, of course, Romans 13. It's said in our Constitution. It's said in our Declaration of Independence, in so many words. The reason government exists is to protect innocent people from evil. And our president appears to be, I don't know what the deal is with President Obama, but he just wants to put his head in the sand when it comes to immigration. He just wants everybody to come here without any balance for security. And that is something that is foolhardy, and it also is a dereliction of duty, because your role as the President of the United States, as the head of our government, or at least one of the heads — we have co-equal branches of government, apparently, it doesn't always work out that way — your role is to protect innocent people from evil. That is your number one priority. When you take an oath, your oath to the United States, to the United States Constitution, to protect innocent people from evil, to protect the United States, to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. If there's one enemy out there to the United States Constitution, it's radical Islam, Sharia law. They want to impose that on everybody. If that's not unconstitutional, I don't know what is. All right, when we get back from the break, we'll get to your phone calls. 888-589-8840. 888-589-8840. You're listening to Cross Examined with Frank Turek on the AFR Talk Radio Network, the American Family Radio Network. We're back in just 2 minutes. Don't go away. Welcome back to Cross Examined with Frank Turek on the AFR Talk Radio Network. Actually, it's American Family Radio Network now. We're adding more stations. So, by the way, If your station's fading out or you can't quite tune it in all the time, our social media director, Jorge Gil Calderon, has just added on our app. If you don't have the Cross-Examined app, you need to get it. He's just added the streaming program on the app. So in other words, you can listen to this program on the app streaming live right now. If you get the app and you download it, you'll see something on the bottom of it. It'll say, let me go to it myself here. It'll say live stream. If you click on live stream, you can listen to it right off your iPhone now, your Droid, your Windows phone. Over 80,000 people have downloaded the Cross-Examined app. You ought to download it. And it has all these podcasts or these radio programs on it. It also has a quick answer section on there that'll help you interact with people in a very intelligent way on the fly, because you always have your phone with you. You always have your Droid with you, whatever you have, your iPad. It's with you at all times, so check that out. Okay, we're about to get to the phone calls. Before I do, let me try and answer the last question briefly. We've had three questions so far. What is Islam? What is political correctness? What issues should Christians consider regarding immigration, particularly Muslim immigration? And let me point out, how can we stop terrorist attacks in America? And for this, I'm going to Andy McCarthy, former prosecutor who prosecuted some terrorists back in the 90s as a prosecutor in New York. He's written several books on this topic. And he has an article in the New Republic just yesterday, I think it is, not the New Republic, that's the liberal publication, the National Review, that's the conservative publication. And here's what McCarthy says right in the middle of this article. It's an article related to Donald Trump and his apparent approval of a registry, Muslim registry, which he didn't approve, actually. He denied approving that. It was more a planted question from a reporter. But in any event, here's what McCarthy says. He says, it is against our law for a person to be targeted for investigative attention solely, there's the key word, solely because of the person's race, ethnicity, or religious affiliation. But if the person's conduct is suggestive of criminal activity, terrorism, or espionage, that is a valid basis for triggering an investigation. Once there is a valid basis for an investigation, it is relevant, it is common sense, to account for religious affiliation to the extent it may shed light on the suspect's actions and state of mind. Of course, this makes sense. You don't target somebody just because that person's a Muslim. But if you have evidence that the person may be involved in criminal activity, and the fact that Islam, radical Islam, seems to support that, then that can be brought to bear on the investigation. That makes sense. Here's what McCarthy goes on to say. He was on a radio show yesterday or a couple days ago. He said, I opined on the Steve Bannon show that the only sensible strategy for preventing terrorist activities like the one last week in Paris was to, A, here's his 2 points, A, or emphasize A, intelligence collection regarding radical mosques, which he says are not hard to distinguish from non-radical mosques, and B, the cultivation of cooperation from the American Muslim community, including informants. So just do those two things. Intelligence on radical mosques and the cultivation of cooperation of the American Muslim community, including informants. He goes on to say this, Steve and I noted that this was the very successful New York Police Department approach after 9/11, but it had recklessly been abandoned by Mayor de Blasio's administration. He's the new mayor of New York and a very, very left wing. And McCarthy goes on to say, and I've previously explained the Obama administration's, quote, countering violent extremism. Notice Obama won't mention Islam. The countering violent extremism strategy similarly rejects the prudent NYPD surveillance approach pioneered by former Commissioner Ray Kelly. Obama prefers to have our law enforcement officers retained by the administration's partners, he puts that in quotes, partners in Islamic communities, including Islamic terrorist organizations linked to the Muslim Brotherhood, which insists Islamist terror has nothing to do with Islam. I mean, that's just ridiculous. That's like asking the wolf to guard the sheep house. That's me. That's not what McCarthy said, but that's just ridiculous. So you want to stop terrorism, you got to use intelligence. You got to identify the radical mosques. And in fact, that's what France needs to do. I've noticed that France has struck out against ISIS in Syria, but they've done not as much to strike out against ISIS in France. There are 47 mosques within 10 miles of Paris that are preaching jihad. France has got to do something about that. Look, if any other group was doing this, if a group got together in a building and conspired to kill innocent people, say it was the KKK group or some white supremacist group or something, if they got together in that building and conspired to kill people, that would be grounds for conspiracy and that would be grounds for arrest and imprisonment. But if you add Islam to it, somehow that protects them, at least in the eyes of many. Well, it's a religion, so you can't. Look, if a religion was involved in murdering innocent people, I don't care if it has the term religion on it. That seems to be a conflicting value to public safety. So now you've got this balance of values again. Yes, we want to have freedom of religion, but that freedom of religion does not include killing innocent people. Now you have the greater value of public safety, which says, okay, we've got to do something about this. We just can't let this go unchecked. So there's always competing values here. The question is, which value should take precedence? Okay, I've talked long enough. Let me go back to the phone lines. Martha in Michigan. Martha, you're on with Frank Turek. Go right ahead, ma'am. Martha, you there? Can't hear the caller. Can you bring her up, Brent?
Hello.
Martha.
Hello.
Yes, hi. I'm sorry. Go right ahead, Martha.
That's okay. I have a question. I hope I can make a brief. When I was a kid, and probably a little later when you were a kid, it started with like Elvis and then long hair and the Beatles and all that, and people of our age at that time were rebelling against the political correctness or the correctness of their day. And I don't understand why these kids on the universities aren't rebelling against political correctness, because it's so dominating, and they should be rebelling against it. I don't understand why they aren't.
Well, hopefully you're right, Martha. Hopefully someday political correctness will become countercultural, or to be anti-politically correct will become countercultural, and they'll rebel against political correctness. Now, some are, to be fair. I mean, there are some people on a college campus who are just upset with political correctness. In fact, one guy who interviewed me after the University of Michigan event, he was there. He's a former Muslim himself. He's now an agnostic. His name is Omar. In fact, you can search for a story he did. In fact, during the break, I'll search for it myself. I'll give you the right citation. Anyway, he wrote a column on the University of Michigan campus against political correctness. It was a satire, and he took a lot of heat for it. And he wound up on the Greta program on the Fox News channel over it. So there are pockets of sanity on the college campus. But what's happening here is college professors have been egging this on for decades now. And now they are partially the victims of their own ideology, because you've got these college students cursing out their professors and ordering them to be fired for things. I mean, it's just madness. And so we need some sanity to come back to this whole thing, Martha. Thank you for your call. Let me move on to Paul, who's been waiting the longest in Illinois. And by the way, if you'd like to join the program, 888-589-8840, 888-589-8840. Paul, you're on with Frank Turk. Go right ahead, sir.
Well, thanks, Frank. I appreciate you taking my call.
Yes, sir.
I'm glad that you're discussing this really important topic. My issue is just with the labeling of the terminology that you're using, radical Islam. Islam is defined by its authoritative text, which is the Quran and the Hadith. And so when Hamas and ISIS and all these folks are doing what they're doing, they're just reading the clear commands of the Quran and following the example of their prophet, Muhammad.
No, and I agree with you 100% on that. But to differentiate between that and people who don't believe in that, who still call themselves Muslims, there has to be some way to distinguish
Muslims,
it. Distinguish it. Now, you could go the other way. You could say Islam, and that would mean those people, the radical people, and you could say liberal Islam, people who don't believe that. But it's just a matter of semantics. Obviously, not all Muslims actually follow the Quran like, say, Osama bin Laden did, or some of these other radicals, ISIS now. They are following Surahs 8 and Surah 9 and some of the sayings and doings of Muhammad. So I agree with you on that. But you do have to make a distinction, because not all Muslims believe that.
Right. Well, I agree with that. But what's driving all this is the ideology.
Sure.
And when we're using the term radical Islamic extremism and whatever, that's misleading the public into thinking that there's a peaceful version of the ideology.
And well, there's a peaceful version of Islam, but those people don't take the texts, literally. Just like there's a very small aspect of some people who claim to be Christians, but they disregard what Jesus says. Now, I don't want to equate Islam and Christianity with regard to violence, because there's no comparison at all. Christianity is nonviolent, and Islam preaches violence. But to say that all people who claim to be Muslims agree with what the texts say isn't true. It's just not.
I agree with you, but that is not addressing the underlying ideology.
Well, sure it is, because when you make the distinction, when you say, like I just did, when you say that if you follow the Quran, you're going to be more like bin Laden, that's making the distinction. I guess my question for you would be, how would you say it?
I would refer to them as either peaceful apostates or Muslims in name only, which is the majority of them.
Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true. Again, this is all semantics here, and semantics are important, don't get me wrong. But then what you're doing here is you're saying that because you interpret Islam to be just the literal interpretation of the text, that's what Islam means. And the majority of Muslims out there don't agree with that. They don't.
Well, but the majority,
are you still there?
They're not. Yeah, I know, but we're really not addressing the problem then. Because
no, we are addressing the problem. We are addressing the problem by saying that a significant minority of people out there who claim to be Muslims are following what Islam says. That's what we're doing. That's what we're saying. Or we're following what the texts say, what the Quran says, what Muhammad did, what the history of Islam is. So we've got to make the proper distinctions, because we don't want to paint all people who claim to be Muslims as terrorists, because they're not. It's just factually true that they're not. Now, I don't want them to be terrorists. I don't want them to obey their texts, but I'm going to point out that their texts and their history show that it is a violent religion if you follow it to the you follow the letter of the law. I'm out of time. Thanks, Paul. Back in just 2 minutes. I'm Frank Turek. Don't go away. What is radical Islam, or Islam, however you want to define it? What is political correctness? What should be our views on immigration with regard to Muslims being brought here? And how can we stop terrorist attacks here in America, at least reduce them? And those are the questions we've been addressing on this program here today. If you'd like more on that, download our app, the free app, Cross Examined, where you'll find this radio program. You can also go to our website, crossexamined.org, and our Facebook pages, like them, if you will, crossexamined.org, and also Dr. Frank Turek, all one word, on Facebook. The question that Martha had regarding political correctness on campus. I had mentioned a young man who wrote an article on my recent trip to the University of Michigan. His name is Omar Mahmoud, M-A-H-M-O-O-D, at the University of Michigan. His title for the article, and you can Google this and find it. In fact, I just tweeted it. If you subscribe to my Twitter, it's @Frank_Turek, T-U-R-E-K. You can subscribe there. You can just see this tweet I just put up, and the title of it is "Fiery Christian Apologists Draw Standing Room Only Crowded Campus Appearance." And he goes and describes what happened there. He's got a couple of quotes wrong in the article, but overall it's a fair article, and that's the title of it. So you can check that out. All right, let me go back to the phone lines, and who's been waiting the longest? Looks like Gary in Mississippi. Gary, you're on with Frank Turek. Go right ahead, sir.
Hey, Frank. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
I think you better pay a lot of attention and run that tape back of your last caller, because he's exactly right.
Uh-huh.
But getting on to my comment, Islam, it amazes me that we have all these educated people in America and we can't define what Islam is.
Well, they don't want to even utter the sentence, Gary. That's the problem. They won't even utter it because they don't want to associate it with a world religion. The problem is that's what the texts say, as Paul was saying, and that's what I've said too. That's what Muhammad did, and that's what the history of Islam is for the past 1,400 years. Now, again, we do need to draw a distinction, though, because not every person who claims to be a Muslim agrees with that. Or claims that jihad, violent jihad, is what they agree with. They don't. But the texts from the Quran and the Hadith and the example of Muhammad and the history of Islam say otherwise. So I don't know how else I can draw the distinction, but I am drawing that distinction. Go ahead.
I agree with you, except for the fact, this is my statement.
Uh-huh.
Islam is a form of government disguised as a religion.
You are correct about that. I already said that in the first segment. Did you hear that?
Yes, sir, I did.
Okay, so I agree with you on that.
Okay, but he is the great deceiver. Listen, this is my point. Every Muslim is a potential terrorist. Can you not see that?
Well, yeah, but you could say every human being is a potential terrorist, too, because that's true. But that doesn't mean that every – you can't say that everybody who's a Muslim is going to be a terrorist. What you can say is, and what Andy McCarthy says in his National Review article is that if you have grounds to say that this person could be involved in criminal activity, then his religious viewpoint could be relevant to his state of mind and his conduct, and particularly when it comes to Islam. So let me agree with that. But just look, we live in a free country here, and we have to have a balance between freedom and security. If you're going to say that every Muslim has to be treated like a potential terrorist, then I think you're a little bit out of balance, because thankfully, the vast majority of Muslims are not terrorists. That's just the truth of the matter, despite what their texts say. All right, let me go to Jack in Illinois. Jack, you're on with Frank Turek. Go right ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
I was just listening to the conversation you were having about every Muslim being a potential terrorist.
Yeah.
I was thinking that's kind of a dangerous idea.
It is.
It's an attitude that could be flipped over. Say every Muslim could potentially be a Christian convert. Mm-hmm. But it's just an attitude, you know, and that determines your actions.
Let me say one other thing about that, Jack, and that is every human being has the potential to be Adolf Hitler. And if you don't think so, you don't understand. I'm not talking about you, Jack, but your listeners out there. If you disagree with that, you don't understand human nature. Because it's much easier to be evil than it is to be good. It's much easier to be bad than it is to be good. It's easy to be selfish. Much easier. In fact, Chuck Colson famously said to a group, he said, I submit to you that we're closer to Adolf Hitler than we are to Jesus Christ. And I think there's a lot of truth in what Colson said there. So everybody's potentially somebody who could be a criminal or a terrorist or a mass murderer. The question is, what do we do from a political perspective about that? That's what we're talking about today. And to round up all the Muslims and say you're going to be a potential terrorist, I think is out of balance with freedom. You can't mandate or you can't guarantee 100% safety for everyone. If you did, you'd have to take away all freedoms, and that's, we're not balancing our values properly. Anyway, sorry, go ahead, Jack.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to make a comment. The main purpose of my call was to say I know why Saudi Arabia and the other nations aren't accepting the refugees. Mm-hmm. It's because they're afraid of three-year-old orphans.
They're afraid of what?
Three-year-old orphans. Isn't that what Obama said about America's reluctance to accept the refugees?
I don't know. I don't know if he said that or not, but I think that Saudi Arabia, particularly the leaders over there, they're just as afraid of ISIS as anybody else is. They want to maintain power over there as well, despite the fact that they helped fund and still help fund terrorism around the country. So they're speaking out of both sides of their mouth, or around the world, I should say. But anyway, thanks for the call, Jack. Got to move on. Got plenty of callers here. Let me move on to John in Illinois. John, you're on with Frank Turek, a redhead.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
Here is what everybody is getting to when they're trying to link Muslims to terrorists. Okay, picture this. Picture our government in outer space. Picture we eliminate our government. Picture our government is totally out of the picture, and there is chaos in the United States. I mean total chaos. Mm-hmm. In the United States, our government has no control. The Muslims are going to stick with the Muslims. The Christians are going to stick with the Christians. And, you know, that's the way it's going to be. And I'm going to trust another Christian. A Muslim is going to stay with another Muslim. And, you know, that's what everybody's trying to get to when they try to distinguish between a Muslim and a Muslim terrorist.
Well, that might be the case, John. But again, that's taking an aggregate group and applying that the truth about the aggregate group to the individual. And you can't do that. Just like you couldn't say if you wanted to make this about ethnic groups, for example, you couldn't say that the attributes of, say, the African-American community here in America by survey apply to an individual African-American. That's an illegitimate use of statistics. So It may be true that, say, a majority of African Americans have believe X, but that doesn't mean that if you pick one African American out of a crowd, that that person believes X. Same thing is true with Islam. It might be that 10% of Muslims believe in violent jihad, but that doesn't mean that one out of every, or that doesn't mean that if you pick one Muslim out, that he's necessarily going to believe in violent jihad. You can't apply the statistics of a group to an individual. That's the problem with doing that. Anyway, let me move on to Pat, who's on in Texas. Pat, you're out with Frank Turek. Go right ahead.
Hey, Frank.
Yeah, Pat, quickly. Well, we're running out of time here. Go right ahead.
All right, let me tell you, Paul's right. A Christian, an evangelical Christian, is one who believes the Bible and practices it. And a Muslim, a moderate Muslim, who believes the Quran and practices it is a jihadist. So the only thing that separates a moderate Muslim from a jihadist is that jihadist just reads the Quran, believes it, and practices it. So any moderate Muslim who comes across this country that you may think is nice and wonderful could become a jihadist by simply reading the ideology and believing it and practicing it. And Paul is absolutely right.
Well, Pat, that's true about you as well, Pat. You could read, you could become, you have the potential to be a Muslim jihadist as well, don't you?
No, because I'm a practicing Christian. I believe in Jesus Christ.
Right, but you see, that guy who comes over from Syria could become a Christian too, right?
He could.
Okay, so the question is, how do we balance security and immigration, or security and compassion? Those are the two things we have to balance. And as a Christian, I want more Muslims coming over here because I want to reach them, but I don't want to do it stupidly. I want people to come over here legally, and I want us to vet the people that are coming over here. But I agree with you. We have to be concerned about Islam, particularly radical Islam, and I don't care what you call it. But I have to make a distinction between the people who agree with jihad and those that do not. We have to do that. Now, I agree with you and thanks for the call, Pat. We're running out of time here. I agree with you that the texts, the history, and the example of Muhammad all point to jihad as being orthodox Islam. I agree with that. That's what the texts say. But thankfully, not every Muslim believes that. And so we have to balance security and compassion. We have to do that. And we want people to come over here so we can reach them, but we can't do it stupidly. As John Warwick Montgomery said, we can't confuse tolerance with stupidity. Well, we'll take this up again, my friends. In the meantime, you may want to get some good books on this topic. My co-author, Dr. Norman Geisler, wrote a book called Answering Islam, which will help you quite a bit, not only on this issue of jihad, but the theological underpinnings of Islam. So check that out. Don't forget to sign up for our Facebook pages, crossexamined.org, and also Dr. Frank Turek. And Twitter, is Frank_Turek. Check it out. I'll see you next week. Happy Thanksgiving, friends. God bless.